This is Desiree Scales with the High Velocity Show on Business Radio X. Welcome. So thank you, Kevin, for leading us in with that music. I always enjoy it. People don't see this, but I do a little dance when it starts.
We need to get some hidden cameras in here for that. Well, we missed you last week.
Thank you. I was in Phoenix doing some speaking and at a conference.
How did that go?
It went very well, and I got to also go see my friends at Infusionsoft, so that's fun.
Well, we love them, so we'd love to have them back.
Dave says hello, Kevin, by the way.
Did you see the football field?
Yes, I was on the football field.
Oh, man, that's the coolest thing, I think.
I know. They've got a football field in the middle of their office, and literally, it's quite interesting. So, we're here working. I know our government is shut down right now, but we are here, so.
It's all that matters, right?
Yes, and we are going to be talking about finance today and how business owners can better maximize their financial future. We've got some experts with us today. I'm really looking forward to the show. I have been for the last several weeks. And we're going to start off with John Brothers. He is a client of mine with Finoptima Solutions, and he's located in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, John.
Hi, Desiree. How are you?
I'm doing great. How is Dayton, Ohio treating you these days?
Well, we're starting to see the beginnings of fall here. It's kind of overcast today, but we've had a really beautiful lead up to fall.
Wow.
And but it's a little overcast today, but we'll get through it.
So I know you have over 10 years of operating experience as a self-employed consultant. Congratulations on that. That's really phenomenal.
Thank you.
And tell us a little bit about your company, Finoptima Solutions.
Okay. I formed Finoptima in 2012 after you said I had been in business operating as a sole proprietor for 10 years, kind of seeing what works and what didn't work. And, when I made it to 10 years, I figured, well, maybe I might as well try to create a brand.
Right.
And so I came up with the name Finoptima Solutions, meaning optimal finance solutions. And one of the first things I did was I created my website with using Bella Web Design.
That's right.
And I'm really pleased with how that's turned out. I've got a lot of great comments about it.
Oh, thank you.
But what we do is we help businesses with their business performance measurement. And that's a pretty broad spectrum. And it seems that with me, I get involved in situations where there's been neglect.
Okay.
And so I have to go in and basically straighten it up, reorganize it, or restructure it. And it can be quite a challenge at times.
So what kind of clients do you work with? Like, what's your typical client?
Well, over the last 12 years, most of my clients, it's been about 50-50 between nonprofits and for-profits.
Okay.
I've done a couple of electronic manufacturers where they manufacture electronic components. I've been the temporary CFO for a couple of healthcare-related nonprofits. I also assisted with the merger of a nonprofit. And then I got involved with one of our local state universities here. I served as a controller for a year on a kind of an emergency basis. That was interesting. And then right after that, I went into a billion-dollar insurance company. And then also along the line, I've done some several private schools and a real estate-based foundation. And then also during the last 3 or 4 years, I've been involved with several bank workouts, which have been really interesting.
I bet. And we've got a guest in the studio who's smiling right now. I've got Matt Heems from Accru, and Matt and I have known each other a few years. And I actually got to see you open Accru. Welcome to the studio. Yeah,
thank you.
And so, Matt, that's what Matt. Well, explain, Matt, what you do. I'm going to let you just tell it. Tell the story.
Well, you know, a crew is a, as Chris and I were talking a little while ago, a crew is a bank-owned trust company.
Right.
But really what it is a wealth strategy firm that we took an existing community bank franchise in the later part of the decade here, call it 08, 09, leading into 2010, that had a trust company that I had started in 2001. And with all that took place in the economy over the last 5 years, the community bank was really struggling. They had a lot of exposure to real estate, hadn't done anything wrong other than being over-concentrated in some specific asset classes like real estate. But the board looked at me and said, listen, what do we need to do to have a chance to do a couple of things? Number one, raise capital to ensure our survival, find a way to get through this downturn, but then on the back side of it, have an opportunity not just to survive but to thrive.
Right.
And so we backed away and said, look, you got a traditional trust company, you got a traditional bank. What if we took and redesigned that business model, rebranded it, create a new brand? The trust mm-hmm. company was not always called a crew. It used to be Cherokee National Trust.
Right.
And we really redesigned the organization from stem to stern and
right.
launched it, as you said, in May of 2011. We opened the doors of a crew, and it's been a lot of fun. We've learned a lot since then. So, lots going on in that world these
days.
And
a lot's changed since 2011. Tell us about that.
Yeah, a lot has changed. So, unfortunately, the bank itself didn't make it. We wound up raising a good bit of money through what we did from a capital perspective, but the bank just had too much real estate exposure.
Right.
And in July of 2012, the FDIC took the bank into receivership. So what that meant for a crew obviously didn't fail
right.
as a subsidiary, but what it was an asset of the bank. So mm-hmm. a crew was acquired by another bank that came in and took over on a Friday night. From that point of last year, we've been working to figure out what exactly the new bank's going to do with the accru model. And what we've landed on now is they're going to take our retail space, which we got a lot of attention for.
Right.
The retail location we opened in May of 2011 has really been recognized nationally and internationally as an innovative next generation sort of a second horizon type delivery model for financial services.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take and run that as sort of their next generation branch.
Right.
And I'm actually going to take a crew and pivot just a little bit and do some strategy work. I've had banks all over the country and around the world want to know how we did what we did, and
right.
had groups in the real estate industry, which is sort of where you and I know each other from a little bit.
That's right.
Want to know how we thought and the methodologies we use, the framework we put in place to come up with an innovative business model, to redesign a brand and the model that you wrap around the brand. So we're in the middle of that transition now, so I'm really excited about what we'll be doing next.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, I remember walking into a crew, and it didn't feel like a banking experience. It was more around the community, more of a community experience, mm-hmm. a very local business model. So when you go there, you feel like, you know, it's the place where everybody knows your name,
yeah.
so to speak. So I thought that was great, very
Thank
innovative.
You. Thank you.
And we also have Chris Staples with Wealth 360 in the studio with us. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Desiree. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
No problem, and I'm so glad you were able to make it. I know you're getting ready to go on vacation with your family. So.
I am, and so we're looking forward to that, but I am happy to be in here today,
right.
Enjoying the great company of some good people.
Good.
And a little bit about Wealth 360.
Absolutely.
You know, I think, you know, a name has a lot of meaning, and so behind Wealth 360, the name actually comes from two old English words, which some people may not be aware of, but wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, is actually two words, W-E-A-L, and then T-H, and that means a condition of well-being, two old English words. And so the name of the company is Wealth 360 for the reason of creating a holistic condition of well-being.
Right.
And so we are a personal financial planning and investment management firm. We typically cater to young professionals with a lot of upward momentum,
mm-hmm.
As well as those people that are near and in retirement. And what we do is we work with different financial planning and investment management strategies to help people reach their goals and achieve them. Also, one of the biggest things, it's one thing to be technical with financial planning and understand the nuances of the tax code and an IRA, a 401k, you know, how to position asset allocations for certain growth, these kind of things. But it's a whole nother thing to have the proper behavior to engage those types of documents and plans, because you can have a very well-written plan with poor behavior,
right,
and the lack of engagement is going to get you nowhere. But you could have a mediocre plan, and we don't build mediocre plans, by the way, but you can have a mediocre plan
not.
And have a very, very good execution, good behavior, and you could build substantial wealth. So that's the premise that we work on. It's really about laying the proper foundation, working from the client's need, and we are a fee only. We're not a transactional. We don't sell any products. We're advice driven. But again, we just enjoy what we do. We have a passion for what we do, and we serve the community in a big way.
So you talk about human capital and how it's a very overlooked asset. Talk to us about that. What does that mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Human capital. That's one thing. You know, when you're usually typically looking at a balance sheet, you're looking at your assets minus liabilities equals your net worth. But in most cases, some of the things that are really not so much tangible, you can't put a number on. So human capital basically is what every person is made up of. It deals with a few things. First of all, you may have a certain level of education, also a certain level of experience. And when you combine that with the amount of time that you have to live or amount of time that you have to work with skill sets and talents, then that is a resource that the free economy is going to be willing to pay for. So an example, let's say, for instance, someone is 24 years old, starts work, earning $50,000 a year, has a 2% growth rate on their income, and they work to age 67, which is the full retirement age for basically anybody who's under Generation Y and under.
Right.
Well, they're going to earn about $3.4 million in their lifetime. But if you go ahead and take a look at that at present value, so you discount the 3.4 all the way back for that the years that they worked, which is about 44 years, that's about $940,000. But the kicker is this. What is that person going to do between the time that they start working to the time that they retire or get on up in life? Because every single day, regardless of what you're doing, your human capital diminishes because you only have a finite number of years to live and you only have a finite number of years to work. And so what you're going to be dealing with is a diminished value of human capital. And so what we try to do is help them understand that, hey, look, are you going to consume everything you make? Are you going to delay consumption through savings and investing? Where are you going to put those resources? How are you going to save money? What are you going to do? So we kind of help script that plan out for them. So human capital has a substantial value. Even if you take someone who has gone through higher learning, maybe in the medical field, they start work in their early 30s. They're going to basically earn, if they start at 152% inflation, they're going to make about $9 million with a fair market, with a present value about $3 million. So those are huge values, and we got to put a number on that.
Absolutely. All right, so John, I'm going to kick it back over to you. You know, I know that you talk about technology and the way that the finance function works in this day and age using technology. How do you see that that is going to change in the future?
Well, there's a lot of things, Desiree, that that are coming on. Everybody's heard about the cloud,
right?
And but the acceptance of the cloud, I think it's been real good with the larger companies, but the smaller companies and the smaller businesses are somewhat hesitant to get into the cloud,
right?
But and it's a harder sell. I actually sell or represent two cloud packages for business planning, and it's a hard thing for people to grasp that information is going to be sitting out there, and it's not going to be secure and that kind of thing. The other thing that's coming on strong is the Google Business apps,
right?
And where really, you know, the days of having a large hard drive and those kind of things are basically going to be coming to an end because everything's going to be stored in the cloud.
Yep.
And the ability to collaborate instead of in the past where we sent, you know, documents or spreadsheets, whatever, via an attachment, what's going to happen nowadays is that you're going to be able to actually have multiple people logged into to a spreadsheet or a document and be editing that as you work.
Right.
And which will obviously improve productivity. And then you won't have to keep track of all the different versions of what documents you're working with.
Gotcha. And you know, it's funny because when you walked into a crew, there's no tellers.
Right.
There's no machines. You know, I assume that's all being done in the cloud. All that information, it's very cloud-based business.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, there's your financial services providers are all going to typically have a core system that they work off of that secures the client data appropriately. There's a lot of regulation around that takes care of it. But at a crew, what we tried to do, and I think what you're going to find more and more financial services providers doing is, you're looking harder and harder at the customer behavior and the customer experience that relates to their financial data. So from our perspective, most of our staff, they spent all of their time in the CRM system that we use. We work with Salesforce.com that everybody, most folks have heard of, obviously cloud-based solution.
Right.
And, you know, what I think is driving the change in financial services or in finance in general is the way people use the institutions, right? I mean, from a branch perspective, yeah, in banks alone, people just don't go into the bank anymore.
I was going to say, there was no drive-through there.
Right, no. No drive-through, no teller line, no.
Yeah, there was nothing.
I mean, if you need cash, you know, the ATMs today, the most advanced ATMs, they can cash checks, they can give you money. Yeah. They're going to image your check if you make a deposit there at the ATM. So an ATM can handle that kind of...
Heck, you take a picture with your phone.
You've got your remote deposit capture on your phone.
Right.
Most banks are still limiting the dollar amounts that you can do with RDC. That's going to slowly go away. But what we found is that people still desire access to wisdom related to their money, primarily because, you know, the transactional element of money is fine as long as there's not a problem.
Right.
You know, everything's okay to be on your cell phone and on the internet as long as I don't have a real question about what's happening when my money and my life collide. So from that perspective, what we were trying to do with the crew and feel like we did a good job of it was create an environment where it was extremely relational, very conversational. We created our own coffee house, our own brand in our space where people would come into the Copper Coin, sit down. They're going to have conversations with each other, with business colleagues, tons of meetings. Work-at-home professionals would come in, use the Wi-Fi, sit there all day. But it would allow our staff to be able to sit and have a conversation over a cup of coffee about something that was extremely important to the people that we care about and our clients. And if we need to go behind the glass into more private rooms back in the back, we certainly do that when appropriate. But by and large, the relationship and the experience – is managed by or sort of monitored by a technology that is cloud-based. I mean, look, the reality is my staff has got to be mobile.
Right.
They can't be chained to their desk. They've got to be able to use their phone, their laptop, their iPad, whatever it may be, to be where their clients need them to be, whether it be in a retail location or elsewhere.
Right, exactly. So, I just thought that business model was very relational, relationship-based, and building trust. And, Chris, that's kind of going back to you again. I don't mean to be going in a circle. It just so happens that this is where we're going with it. But so, Chris, talk to us about the relationships. With all the technology that we have, why can't people just go to their computer and invest and just make those decisions and do their due diligence and research? Why are you still in the picture is what I'm asking.
You know what? Hey, that is a great question. I'll tell you why. Because as we sit here today, more knowledge is being created in a daily basis than probably has been over the last 100 years. And this is on a daily basis because what you've got are people taking and they're reading information and they're putting information together.
Mm-hmm.
So what's out there now is not only more information. However, we have greater access to information. So not only has the volume of information increased, the way you can access it has increased. So what I talk to people about is it's not for lack of information because anybody can go out and find the information that they need.
Right.
What the problem is what to do with that information.
Right.
So what they need me for is to say, okay, look, here's the thing. Here's what you want to accomplish. Here's the pieces of the puzzle that, first of all, you have to take these pieces of the puzzle and you've got to forget these other pieces. And let's go ahead and put together the picture that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Not that everything is going to happen exactly like you want it because you have to have a plan, and as things change, you've got to be know enough that you have to either deviate or be flexible, because financial planning, just like life, is a very organic document.
Right.
So it's going to change as life changes.
Yep.
But the biggest thing is, yes, you can go out and you can find information, but the value is not just in the information itself. It's what to do with the information. And that's really not knowledge. That's what's called wisdom. Mm-hmm. So knowledge with wisdom is going to get results.
Perfect. And that's exactly, you know, what you bring to the table is that wisdom.
Absolutely. Through experience. You know, I've been in the industry for a little over 20 years now, mm-hmm. telling my age a little bit. And I haven't seen everything, but I've seen a lot. And because I've seen a lot, I'm able to take and transfer that information and expertise over across the table to the client.
Right. So you've earned your gray hairs.
Absolutely. I have earned. As long as it turns gray and not loose, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So, you know, and anybody can just jump in on this one, but talking about finance and how things are going, anybody want to talk about the future and where things are going? Obviously, Matt, you've got a business model that has changed the way that banking is done. What do you see coming up in the future?
Well, I think that if you've got, you know, finance in general is broken up into sort of subcategories, right? You got your banking, your investments, insurance, tax, even estate planning, I'd put in those buckets. And I think any of these verticals, if you want to call them that, I think what you're going to see in the future is more and more focus on, by your smart providers, they've got to figure out how to reset the value exchange, is mm-hmm. how I would express it. You know, if you take banking as an example, you know, easy to pick on the banks, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not hard to pick on the banks. It's broken, right? I think everybody would agree with that. Insurance is the same way in many regards. I think you've got issues there. Mm-hmm. But with the banks, the value exchange is broken. What the consumer feels like they get, and that's really what it comes down to, right? I mean, perception's reality. They feel like, whether it's fees or lack of service, what they get in exchange for doing business with the bank that they've chosen to do business with mm-hmm. is not fair. It's not an appropriate exchange of value between the organization and the consumer.
Right.
And what these banks have got to figure out is how can they step back. And the community banks in particular, your smaller local organizations used to be really, really good. I grew up around it. My father was a community banker.
Okay.
And, you know, folks used to come into my dad's office when I was young, and literally couples would come in and say, hey, look, we're thinking about having another child. We don't know if we can afford it. That local community banker was that guy you'd go to, or that lady you'd go to that knew you, that understood what was happening in your life.
Yeah.
You'd see him on Friday night at the football game or whatever it may mm-hmm. be. There was a value that was provided by that local financial institution that with really the proliferation of technology, banking has become so transactional.
Mm-hmm.
The banks have forgotten that if all you're going to compete on is efficiency and price and features and benefits, it's really nothing but a race to the bottom.
Right.
And the only guys that are going to win a game like that are the biggest banks, is the mega banks, because you've got to have scale to win if you're going to reduce price. And we've forgotten, I think, that there needs to be more to that interaction than just the transaction. It's got to be relational. I mean, I do think it comes down, Chris, what you're talking about. Yeah, it needs to be about the advice. It's about access to wisdom. Look, everybody needs a bank or the resources a bank provides. But the question is, what are you going to do with those resources? How do they fit into the proper context of your life? And
right.
I think from a future perspective, your smarter organizations are going to be the ones that step back and say, okay, we've got to really think hard about what we consider our value to be to our customer.
Mm-hmm.
Who is our customer? Can we really accurately answer that question?
Right.
Is it just about a wealth metric,
mm-hmm.
or is it about a mindset? Are you seeking out people who think the way you think, that see value in what you offer? And I think that type of thinking is what's going to drive sort of the next iteration of financial services. I mean, technology you can't say technology is taking over. It already has. It will continue to be more efficient and more seamless at a transactional level. But how can you refine that relational element
mm-hmm.
while leveraging the technology to remove the friction from the relationship?
Right. So, John, talk to us about that. What are you seeing as far as, you know, future with finance and how it works with companies? What should they be looking at?
I just want to make a comment about mm-hmm. what Matt was saying there, and I just want to know what his thoughts were. But up here in Ohio, especially the Dayton area, we're seeing the credit unions get pretty aggressive,
mm-hmm.
and I just wondered what Matt's thoughts were on that and what's going on down south.
Yeah, John, I'll tell you, the credit unions are really becoming the beneficiaries. And I'll tell you, it's not even just down south, and it sounds like it's happening in your area too. I just got back. I was in Australia in June speaking at an international banking conference. And what they refer to as their mutuals down there, which is their credit unions, they're really benefiting from the I don't know what you want to refer to it as, the bad reputation the banks have gotten.
Right.
But the credit unions at the same time, you know, here in the United States, obviously, you know, they're non-taxed. They're non-profits. So you've got a very different business model with a credit union than you have with a bank. The types of loans they make are different. But credit unions have been more forward-thinking, I'm going to say, over the last 5 to 7 years about their brand positioning and understanding what it is they offer the community than the banks have been. I think the banks have been guilty of sort of laying back and trusting the monopoly they've got on wealth and money,
right,
in the world. And I think the credit unions are unique, in a unique position to really benefit from individuals and families and even small businesses that are wanting a better experience as they do business with someone locally. I mean, I think they're really positioned well, and the ones that are doing well are the ones that have communicated that effectively in their brand position, right? I mean,
right,
you've seen so many credit unions. They're taking credit union out of their name. They're going toward names that are, I don't know what the right word for it is, more edgy, more relevant.
Right,
but
right,
that's kind of what you're getting into is this search for relevance,
mm-hmm,
with,
mm-hmm,
these organizations and banking and financial services. It just, there hadn't been a lot of innovation on that front. But the credit unions are certainly, John, down here, they're doing well. I mean, you've got, you know, LGE, which is the Lockheed Georgia Credit Union. LGE is doing well. Delta,
yeah,
is a huge credit union here in the South,
right,
because of Delta being located in Atlanta.
Yeah,
they've transitioned from, now they're community credit unions. They're not just specific to the organization where they started. They've really made a dent in the market share of some of these big banks.
Yeah.
And you mentioned real estate a while ago. I mean, it seems like they're getting more aggressive with the real estate, because the banks are obviously getting out of that.
They are. I mean, the banks are in a position now where they just won't take a risk on you. You know, the banks are – the regulatory posture of the FDIC is tough, and you don't have the FDIC dealing with the credit unions. They've got the NCUA, I believe it is who insures their deposits. So –
right.
So they have been more aggressive, and you know, I think that even the credit unions, and I've had a conversation with a local guy in the last couple of months. They're looking to utilize their opportunities to set up what are called credit union service organizations or CUSOs to offer other services such as insurance, investments, you know, things like this that are fee based business. Which really, that's what these banks and credit unions are trying to do, is figure out how to diversify their income statement. They got to get away from dependency on margin and find a way to get more fee income. And real estate's certainly a way that they're looking to further take a dent. They're really taking the place of the community bank, unfortunately, I think, from a banker's perspective.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I want to chime in on that, because talking about, you know, where we see things going in the future, one of the beautiful things about free market is consumers have the power through their demand to create new supply. And so I think some of the shifts that we're seeing are consumers, first of all, going back to the point we just made about information being available, consumers these days have access to information. So they're able to see things, read things, understand things at a much quicker pace. And so that's developing new needs that they want. So just because of that, I see that the banking industry, as well as the financial services industry as a whole, whether it's,
yeah,
a bank or whether it's advisory business or whether it's the insurance business, they're by force, if you want to call it that, some of their business models are being shifted because consumers are demanding something a little bit different than what they've been getting. Some have had bad experiences in the past, some have had good, but on the wholesale of things, consumer demand drives business model change. And I think,
yeah,
right now what we're seeing is that consumers are demanding something a little bit more cleaner, meaning much more transparent than what it's been in the past. Quite frankly, the financial services industry is a bit opaque. It's very voluminous. It's very complex, a lot of moving parts. And so what the consumer is wanting is something a little bit more transparent. And so we're seeing where whether it is a bank or a credit union, getting into the advice side of the business because consumers are demanding it, and rightly so, where a credit union can offer those services to the community. That's only going to benefit the community by doing that as well, and it's going to fit to the demand of the consumer. So I think right now what we're seeing is a bit of consumers demanding something a little bit different, and that's driving some of these business models to break and fracture and to become something different and to what we're seeing today.
Right, right. And I think it affects consumers, whether they're business owners or non-business owners. And with the advent of social media and technology, they can really make their voice heard because it never used to be that way. The bank was, this is how we do it. That's it. Mm-hmm. So now things have totally changed due to the fact that we do have a voice using technology.
Absolutely.
And the internet.
Absolutely. Before, you know, something happened to you, you could just tell your friend about it.
And
right. At the velocity that would move through the community was very slow. Now, you can reach 10,000 people with a click of a button.
Right.
And the velocity is much quicker. And so businesses are attuned to that. And I think that it causes them to change behavior at a certain level.
So, John, what is the CFO of the future? I mean, what are business owners concerned with? We talk about budgeting maybe being sort of a thing of the past. You know, what kind of issues are around preparing an annual budget these days?
Well, let's talk about the CFO, first of all. Mm-hmm. I mean, the CFO of the future is going to be, he's not going to be just an accounting kind of guy. He's going to have to be involved in all facets of the business. And he's going to have to know what's going on with sales, what's going on with production, and those kind of things. He can't just be an accounting type person, okay?
Right.
He's also going to have to be a strong technology guy, too. With respect to the topic of budgets, you know, there's been a lot written about it over the last 10 years or so. And what is happening in the industry is that businesses are moving more to rolling forecasts as opposed to a statutory budget. And there's always going to be businesses that are going to need a statutory budget because of the way they operate. But for the business that is dynamic and is changing with markets and those kind of things, they're moving more to rolling forecasts as opposed to just a hard and fast budget. Because, you know, the budget takes a long time to prepare. And, you know, getting people to focus on it and those kind of things, it's just hard in this day when things are moving so fast. Some of the other issues are that, you know, it's not aligned with the strategic plan sometimes. And I've seen this a lot, especially in the nonprofits. It encourages what I call inappropriate behavior, where you know they've got a budget surplus going into the last month of a year, and so they'll spend everything in the last month, just so their budget doesn't get cut.
Yeah, and I've never understood that.
I've seen that so many times, which is I find it quite humorous myself because. The way people should be budgeting, if they are going to do a budget, is based upon what they need, okay, and to do what they need to do. And I've seen so many situations where there's this dump at the end of the year, where they spend all the money just to blow out the budget there.
That's usually the time of year when people plan a new website. I can attest to that. The marketing guys, we love them, the CMOs at the end of the year, because that's when they're trying to buy a website. They got to spend the money. And so do you think that technology is changing then? And you talk about this rolling budget and the forecasting that business owners can do. Do you think technology had a role in making those changes?
Oh, yeah. What you're seeing today is there's a lot of software. Again, it's in the cloud,
right?
And what you can do is you can have the different participants in the budget or in the forecast you know, prepare their piece and have it. And these software programs also have workflow where they can submit it to their superiors, and it rolls up, and then finally when it gets approved, it gets rolled into the master forecast. And these things are real time savers.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, as opposed to, I mean, there's a statistic out there that says that 78% of the country uses spreadsheets for budgeting. And if you've ever done a budget for a company that's got 20 departments or something like that, and tried to roll it up in spreadsheets, I mean, it's a time-consuming task.
Right.
And so these software programs eliminate all that confusion, all those different iterations, having to keep track of versions of spreadsheets and those kind of things. So, again, technology is coming to the forefront and helping the finance function. But you've got to embrace it. I mean, one of the things I see, especially in the small businesses, is that they're still stuck with what I call pre Y2K software.
Really?
And,
wow.
And in terms of ability to get information out, and then people are not trained.
Right.
And I mean I've knocked spreadsheets here, but I mean spreadsheets are a great tool for learning, getting data out, getting information about a business. And but a lot of companies just don't, you know, they don't invest in the time and training. And so it just, you see people doing redundant things, entering information two or three times. And it's just disturbing.
So
from my point.
Do you help them find technology that will streamline this process better?
I have, and matter of fact, I'm working on an engagement now where we did just that. We had a client that had, I want to say, about 9 different packages, and none of them communicated to one another.
Right.
And so what we did is we looked at the alternatives out there, mm-hmm. and what we decided to do was we had a let's call it the hub that was kind of the driver of the entity. And so what we did is we just went out and attached their modules that they had for the other components
mm-hmm.
to that. And so now what happens is that, you know, when a customer is entered in customer service, then it flows all the way through. It goes all the way through to the accounting package and winds up in the billing piece. And so you don't have to input somebody's name and address 4 or 5 times,
right.
Which is just redundant.
That's great. I mean, I see businesses struggle all the time with technology and streamlining their processes and having several different packages that, you're right, they don't talk to each other. But in this day and age, that really should not even be an issue because there's so many software as a service packages out there that can streamline everything. So, Matt?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, really, John, what I'm hearing you talk about is what I think the technology is really doing to help. When you ask Desiree about the CFO of the future, it's really about business intelligence, right? I mean, it's about
right.
the ability and the efficiency of an individual or organization to take the data that's in their hands and pull out intelligible information from it and say, okay, how can we now, you know, find, as Nate Silver would say, the signal in the noise, right? I mean, it's okay, there's tons of data that all organizations have got at their disposal, but what really matters? So hopefully the technology is going to be used. And again, you know, John, to your point, that's where it comes back to training, is that the staff know how to use the technology correctly
right.
to seek out those things that the company really needs to measure. And beyond just the common sense, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. not just about, you know, return on assets, return on equity, internal rate of return, but what are the long-term metrics of how are we doing and how can we affect our business to stay relevant?
Right. And we had Michael Guille, I always say that wrong. He was on from Juice Analytics a couple weeks ago talking about taking data and giving it to people in a way that they can understand, either an infographic, something visual. And Chris, you know, I take it with your business, that's kind of what you're doing, but instead of showing the data, you're actually verbalizing the data for people, you know, because there's a lot of data out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's more data than someone can reasonably consume.
Right.
And you're right, putting it in a way that's digestible, because I can create a financial plan if you and it ends up, it could be a 40 to 100 page document. But actually, what I leave with the client on top of that is just one piece of paper that's an action sheet that says, hey, look, here's the deal. Here's your document. It's a big document, a lot of information mm-hmm. here. But if you do everything that's on this one piece of paper, you're going to be able to engage this document very effectively. And that's what people need. They need the not only the information, but they need a very simplistic, very focused version of how to engage that document in order to meet those goals. Because
right.
you know, you can hand someone a 100-page document and say, hey, look at me. I did a great job building your financial plan. Good luck. Well, that's not the problem. The problem is being able to engage that in a very effective way. And that's where it comes down to someone being able to distill everything down to the finer points and say, look, if you just do these things right here based on all the information, based on your goals, based on your resources, if you do these simple things here, then you're going to effectively engage this document. And as things change and as your life changes, we'll just change it a little bit. We'll rework it. It's flexible. And we'll move forward. But
right.
it's just really distilling it down to the simple points and doing those points over and over. And that's nothing more than creating good habits is
right.
all it is.
Exactly. You know, what's interesting to me, Matt, is when I walk into a crew, there's a lot of young people there, mm-hmm. a lot of young people. Are they actually coming in to get the advice or get the coffee? Or how does that all kind of, work together? It's for the coffee. But how do you hook them in and...
You know, it's not really about hooking them in.
Right.
To answer your question, yes.
Okay.
they're coming in for a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, what we wanted to do first and foremost was, again, create an environment that our community would see as a hub. We wanted we weren't trying to do something that would draw people in. We wanted to create an environment that they would own themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And whether people come in there to hang out with a friend, meet a coworker, spend time with their neighbor, their business, you know, someone they're doing business with. A lot of laptops open
yeah.
in our space. You know,
music.
A lot of music.
Yeah.
I mean, the place is open from 7:30 in the morning
right.
to 11 at night.
At
so
nighttime, there's music.
Live music on Friday,
yeah.
Friday and Saturday and Monday right. nights. You know, we have things for the community.
Right.
But from our standpoint, what we're trying to do with the Accrue brand, it was designed to do a few things. We wanted to provide personalized wisdom mm-hmm. through a relevant experience that clarified today and prepared tomorrow. So if we could look at our clients and say, okay, as a result of interacting with our strategists, we're helping you understand not only the context of what's happening in your life today, but how your money's colliding in those moments. Because as we did the research that we did ahead of launching the new brand and the new delivery model, what we found was when you ask people about their money, they talk about their life.
Yeah, very true.
They don't talk in terms of mutual funds and checking mm-hmm. accounts and mortgages. They talk in terms of a job change, a birth of a child, a cancer diagnosis, mm-hmm. you know, a loss of a loved one, a divorce, a marriage, whatever. And what we try to do is say, listen, our organization was designed optimally to be a single source trusted advisor to take what is an extremely complicated industry, as Chris, you mentioned earlier. I mean, it is extremely opaque. It's not easy to understand how an insurance policy is constructed, right?
Yeah.
And the insurance industry has done that on purpose. They
sadly
just,
so. Yeah.
They just
yeah.
assume not everybody understand the nuances of, you know, a variable annuity. But the way the industry is built so much around product, what we try to do is say, listen, we want to find people who really see value in having someone that can help connect the dots on their banking, their investments, their insurance, their tax, their financial planning, whatever that may be. Because
right.
here's what we learned, and this is something, again, in the future that's got to be figured out by the big guys,
mm-hmm.
Primarily the banks, is it's not about banking. No more than it's about financial planning or it's about insurance.
Right.
It's really about their money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's about as far as it goes for most folks. It's just their money.
Right.
And, yeah, whatever product, whatever resource I need to deploy to help figure out how my money and my life are colliding, that's great.
Right.
But if we can just be there as a resource for them, that's what we're trying to do. And again, our retail space is just more of a place we hope that they're comfortable coming in, sitting down and talking, whether it be with us or someone else. It's okay with us either way.
So you're not scaring them off with throwing a spreadsheet at them, basically?
No. We're my staff is trained. Their job one is actually to shut up.
Okay.
So,
I like
you
that.
Know, it's just ask questions and listen.
Right.
You know, and if they'll listen well, then we can better understand sort of what the concerns and needs are.
Yeah, and I think all three of you are in that same boat. You know, I think listening to your clients and really hearing what they have to say, whether they own a business or whether they run, you know, their family economics, you need to have somebody who can really listen and be in your corner and understand your situation. And that can be really, really tricky sometimes. I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know, I want to bring something up. Matt, you mentioned, you used the word hook 'em in regards to.
Right.
And, you know, and Matt was saying, look, it's not about hooking them, it's about, you know, them having ownership. And you make such a valid point because in this day and age, you know, we've got to get the consumer so much more credit because, you know, they're tired of trying to be hooked and reeled in. What they're really looking for is, first of all, what it sounds like you're providing is an incredible experience. And also a fantastic relationship with someone that all they want to do is get their answers, and they want to get real answers. They don't want to get, you know, some kind of runaround or some kind of polished script. They want to say, hey, look, here's my money, here's my goal, and then the answer is provided. And so as we're seeing, and you can speak to this when it comes to, you know, developing websites and marketing,
right.
You know, the old days of trying to create some kind of hook situation, mm-hmm. You know, I see we talked earlier today about the business model changing. Well, advertising, the way advertising is done is going to change the business model as well, because people are not looking to be hooked. They're looking to be given very good, valuable information, and they'll determine how they go about doing business. And that all goes back to, you know, Google's Zero Moment of Truth script, the whole thing they've come up with. And it's amazing how consumers see it. And I tell you, if businesses don't change, the consumer's going to change the business for them.
Oh, absolutely. And they already have in so many cases. You know, we can watch that happen daily, on a daily basis. So, John, anything happening in your world right now that you'd like to shout out about? How do people find you and get a hold of you out there?
Well, obviously, the best way to get a hold of me is through the beautifully designed website that somebody down in Atlanta did for me.
Yay, Bella. That's
www.optimusolutions.com.
Uh-huh.
And there's a contact page there where they can fill out, provide the information, and send it to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of white sheets, white papers.
Right.
That they can download on budgeting and some of the products that I offer. And if you just want to reach me by email, it's jbrothers@finoptimusolutions.com. And I'll be back to you as promptly.
Perfect. All right, Matt, how do we find you out there?
Best way to find me is going to be email right now. Like I said, we're transitioning a crew. And matt@acrewstrategy.com is out there. I'm probably need to talk to you about a website at some point.
Sounds great.
But yeah, well, that's going to be the best way to get me, matt@acrewstrategy.com. And we spell accrew, A-C-R-U.
Yeah.
So a little bit different spelling there.
It is, but it really makes sense when you go to the website and see what it's all about.
Yeah.
But
accrewwealth.com.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah, accrewwealth.com is the legacy site, and it'll be out there for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So you can learn a little bit about what we've done. But
okay. But
yeah, it's exciting days ahead. So.
Yeah, good for you. I've watched you guys just completely change, and I can't wait to see what the future will bring for you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Chris, how do we find you? And you've got some great giveaways on your site, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a couple of places you can find me. You know, my corporate website is wealth360advisors.com, and that's advisors with an O, A-D-V-I-S-O-R-S, plural.com, wealth360advisors.com. You can reach me by phone if you want to call me here in the area. It's 678-392-1155, and just hit extension 4. You'll reach me. And if you go to my website, I'm going to have up here shortly a free download for you. And it's basically the 10 things you can do to become financially healthy today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good read, it'll at least get you started in the right direction.
Yeah, and when that's ready, I will add that to the show notes so people can click on the link and get to the site and find it.
Sure, and for the listening audience out there, it will be up probably in the next 24 to 48 hours, so give it some time.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll get that all connected and synchronized. But thank you, all of you, for being on the show today. Really enjoyed it, learned a lot, as I always do, and looking forward to seeing what the future will bring, and I hope you will all come back in the future as well.
Love to. Great, thanks for having out.
Thank you.
Would love to.
Thanks, John. All right. From our studios here in Atlanta, it's Desiree Scales with the High Velocity Show, Business Radio X. We'll see you next week.